erfolgreiche Jahre.
We're a community. And here's our radio station.
Welcome to Sprouts, Radio from the Grassroots, a weekly program that showcases radio production by independent community media. We bring local stories to a global audience, produced at a different location every week. I'm Ursula Rudenberg.
Okay, Big Goyle is coming to kill us. Please help.
This is what Oleg Savitsky wrote on his laptop to all of his international contacts on the night of February 24th, 2022. He was sitting in his home office in Kyiv as bombs began falling on the first night of Russia's full-scale invasion. Oleg Savitsky is a climate and energy policy expert in Ukraine and an active participant in international environmentalist movements. He co-founded Razum We Stand, an independent Ukrainian organization that links fossil fuel dependency to autocracy and terror, particularly to war crimes in Ukraine. Recently, he co-wrote an article in an online newspaper called Big Oil Finances Putin's War Crimes and Trump's Political Ambitions. I was able to reach Oleg in Kyiv to elaborate on what he had written. We started out our conversation by talking about the grassroots organizing that is happening in Ukraine around climate change.
We have a network of about 50 local and national NGOs who are active on climate mitigation and adaptation.
Wow, 50 NGOs in a country the size of Ukraine does indicate a significant interest in climate change.
Yes, we have quite a diverse environmental movement. So the climate network is basically grounds where most of green and environmental NGOs collaborate and engage with each other.
And what's the name of your organization?
It's called Razum We Stand. We established Razum We Stand in June 2022 as a response to Russian full-scale military invasion. And we've got this initial support from hundreds, eventually more than 800 international organizations from all over the world that supported our call to end fossil fuel addiction that fuels Putin's war machine. Razum We Stand works on issues not limited to climate. We are an intersectional organization, and we highlight the connections between fossil fuels and autocracy, abuse of human rights, and other issues connected to criminal activity of big oil.
Okay, let's get into it.
Well, let me start with a bit of a personal story. It was clear that Putin is going to attack and invade in Ukraine, and that was clear for most informed people in Ukraine back in February 2022 and even earlier. Well, I was concerned, as was everyone, and thinking what we can do to counter this terrible threat. And what actually I did in the night of the invasion, when we got the feeling that, okay, it's coming now. I was sitting at my home office with a laptop and sending emails to whatever international contacts I had to alert people, okay, big oil is coming to kill us. Please help. Yeah, and we've got actually a lot of support, and this is how we launched the Stand With Ukraine campaign. And basically, when I finished sending the emails through all the contacts that I had in mind, then, well, it was around 4 in the morning, and I heard the first explosions of the rockets hitting Kyiv.
Wow. When you said big oil is coming to attack us, what did that mean?
Actually, Russia is a criminal organization which is running on oil money. Oil and other fossil fuels account for around half of Russia's federal budget. The second person in Russia after Putin, like the deputy of Putin and boss of many strategic decisions in Russia, is Igor Sechin, CEO of Rosneft, Russian largest owned company, and he basically dictates a lot of Russia's energy policy.
That highlights how important gas and oil is to Russia.
Exactly. It's the business that Putin managed to take over since 1990s. And after he cracked down on oligarchs and consolidated the control over oil and gas industry, basically, I think what's happening now was pretty much locked in, because when a criminal organization run by former KGB agents get access and control over resources of one quarter of the planet, it's really dangerous.
Rosneft is the oil company that belongs to the Russian government, and Gazprom is the gas company, and both of those companies are essentially owned by the Russian government.
Owned by Putin, actually.
What do you mean?
He is the absolute power in Russia, and any business in Russia operates and exists only because it pays some contribution to Putin. Putin doesn't have an official holding of any assets, but any oligarch that operates in Russia and is not in jail and is not killed has a deal with Putin, and those people are obliged to fulfill the will of the boss of the bosses, the master criminal. We mentioned Sneft and Gazprom, but in Russia there are dozens of oil and gas companies, and all of them are in this arrangement Putin has, where the very narrow circle of people in the Kremlin have a control and interest in the operations. So any oil and gas business in Russia is under this umbrella of Kremlin's criminal gang. And after the invasion, we called for a total ban on Russian fossil fuels in the global markets to isolate this criminal gang.
How much is Putin personally profiting from this?
Well, he is profiting from Russian economy for decades. So his profits are counting in hundreds of billions of dollars. You can see the extent of his resources from his residence at the Black Sea coast is a country in the country, a huge territory dedicated for Putin's wildest fantasies. Underground bunkers carved into a cliff of a coastal mountain, and it has its own hockey arena. It's available on YouTube, and you can see what crazy people like Putin build with immense money that they have.
So Putin is profiting from this war in Ukraine.
Since the start of the full-scale invasion, Russia received around $700 billion for oil and gas exports, and he has control over most money flows. Yeah, but Putin, well, did a strategic mistake when he attacked Ukraine. He was assuming that we Ukrainians would behave like others when facing the invading armies, that we will just run away in shock. But actually, we took weapons and we confronted the invading army and we killed them. And we will kill every Russian that would try to take our land. And Putin was not expecting this level of resistance and this level of self-organization from ordinary people who formed voluntary battalions, and thousands of people just going to the military drafting offices and standing up to arms. And actually, no one was expecting that. But the courage and dedication that we have is the biggest resource, and it proved to be more valuable than blood money that Putin has. Putin is having losses himself, because politically and economically for Russia as a country, this war has a terrible human cost. Around 500,000 soldiers in Ukraine already, and they've spent hundreds of billions of dollars on weapons and munitions, hundreds of cruise missiles, ballistic missiles to attack Ukrainian cities, and infrastructure are very expensive. And it's only possible because Russia continues to receive huge inflow of money for oil and gas. If you stop Russian oil tankers and close Russian pipelines, the next day this petrostate would collapse.
Your point when you talk about big oil is that it's not isolated to Russia and Putin. There's collusion from Western countries and OPEC. So can you explain how Western corporations have cooperated with Russia's energy corporations?
To start with, Western oil companies actually created Putin in his current form because they partnered with Rosneft, with Gazprom, with other oil and gas companies in Russia, enabling their rise, their expansion, and their presence at global markets. Shell and Chevron and Exxon and BP were handing the keys to global energy markets to Putin and his cronies, and they invested huge amounts of money and provided critical technology, which Russia didn't have, for offshore drilling, for complex operations in the permafrost, in deep Siberia, in Arctic areas, and also fracking and other technologies. They were all provided to Russia by international companies and American companies like Halliburton. I think in Texas, there are a lot of people that made a killing on cooperating with Russia and are actually in big part responsible for his rise and the current war crimes that he is committing in Ukraine.
Since the full-scale invasion, have the Western corporations withdrawn from the Russian gas companies, or do these partnerships still exist?
The crazy thing is that some companies with American capital still operate in Russia. Halliburton itself were providing critical drilling equipment and their technology to Russia all the way through 2022 and even in 2023, and only recently declared that they pull out from Russia. But their closest rival, SLB, formerly known as Schlumberger, continues to work in Russia with Rosneft, with others, and they directly support Russian economy.
Is that an American company?
They have shares owned by American investment funds and American citizens, and they have an office in Houston as well. So, yeah, in Houston, there are a lot of friends of Putin.
So they're profiting from the war.
Exactly, yeah.
You're listening to Sprouts, Radio from the Grassroots, a weekly program bringing you local radio productions of national interest. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, and I'm speaking with Oleg Savitsky from Razum We Stand, which is a grassroots Ukrainian organization that addresses big fossil industries' connection to war and autocracy. Oleg was recently the co-author of an article in Euromaidan Press called Big Oil Finances Putin's War Crimes and Trump's Political Ambitions. We did end up speaking about the U.S., but first, the conversation turned to OPEC.
So if we talk in plain and simple language, OPEC is a bunch of autocrats who control a good half or even more of existing oil resources in the world. And this organization, I would say it's also a criminal organization. That OPEC is legally recognized and able to operate is a historical legacy of 1970s, when Arab countries and others who were unhappy with the US and the West united to have economic and political leverage over the West through controlling oil supply. Since then, it's emerged more into a means to control oil prices globally and to ensure massive profits for the members of the cartel. The main players there are Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, Iraq, Qatar, Kuwait, and other big producers of oil. OPEC is the format for negotiations and has an extension called OPEC Plus, where they also invite Russia for negotiations.
How are they responding to the war in Ukraine?
Well, yeah, I think that they were quite happy because 2022 was a year of record profits for all oil companies, including oil companies of OPEC members. So I think they were praising Putin because the energy prices in Europe spiked to historically highest levels, and Putin made their fortunes rise at unprecedented pace in the last 2 years. Companies in Europe were unsure if they would be able to receive any oil and gas. So businesses in Europe rushed to global markets to grab whatever oil and gas they could at whatever price they were offered. And that provided huge profits to those who took advantage of the situation.
So the profits came from the fact that they were able to raise the prices because there was such a high demand?
Yes, especially because European companies, which discontinued cooperation with Russia, they needed alternative suppliers, and the switch was happening very fast. So that created a spike in prices. But the demand for oil and gas is still high, and that's in large extent to the flawed policies of G7 countries, which back down on energy transition, continue fossil fuel subsidies, and which failed to enforce strong sanctions against Russian oil.
The article that you had written focused on the relationship between autocracy and the oil industry and the gas industry.
Yeah. OPEC is like a club for big oil and autocrats to come together and try to take advantage of the world by controlling the oil supply. And when you look at them, you will find very few democratic countries among OPEC members. Most of them are ruled by autocrats or kleptocrats.
So is the connection just profits between big energy companies and autocratic systems?
Well, it's a bit more complex because oil and gas is also about the infrastructure and the industry, and the big part of material existence of societies and countries. When you control oil and gas, you control a big part of the economy, which is dependent on oil and gas. At least that was the case in the 20th century before the rise of renewables. And it's still the case in most countries, except countries like Denmark and Germany. They are moving away from fossil fuels, but still not to the extent that would shield them from blackmail and the influence of big oil.
So it's also about control over...
Yes, systems and societies. And that's quite dystopian when we look at countries like Saudi Arabia, Iran. They are built literally around oil and gas. And the control over society is so profound that basically you don't have any chances to fight the system from within. Yeah, we've seen that in Russia where the opposition was just decimated.
If Russia were to attack another country beyond Ukraine, how would that affect the big oil industry?
I think they would have another wave of windfall profits. And actually, that's the way they always operated. Because any upheaval always sends people to the pumping station. And not just consumers, but also big companies who are trying to secure their operational and industrial assets and so on. So in any case of instability of war, energy prices, prices of fossil fuels, they spike.
So there's really no incentive for big oil to see Ukraine stop this invasion.
Well, exactly. This brings another layer of criminality to big oil. This war is not just war between Russia and Ukraine. That's actually the war of fossil fuel industry against all of the humanity. Have you seen top-level politicians paying extreme attention to the climate crisis in the recent 2 years after the start of the full-scale invasion? No, because it's now war and everyone is distracted and no one is busy with implementing climate policies and taking away the money from big oil. This is exactly what they wanted and needed. Putin is their most successful investment in history because they would never have such profits if Putin was not doing what he's doing.
So let's talk about the United States.
Yeah, I think US now is in a very dangerous situation where big oil is gearing up to bring Trump to the office for the second time.
Tell us about the meeting that was held in Mar-a-Lago last April. I think the meeting was called an energy roundtable, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, that's how they call their dirty assemblies. But that's not about energy. That's more about money and power. The meeting in his mansion was an explicit bargain between him and representatives of big oil, this so-called quid pro quo deal between Trump and big oil CEOs So if Trump gets elected with the financial contributions to his campaign from oil companies, he promises to deregulate their operations, to reduce taxes for them, to maintain subsidies, and to repeal environmental regulations and restrictions on their activities, and even allow to drill for oil and gas at federal lands, which was one of the things that Biden administration was trying to stop.
Going to Alaska and drilling more there in the Arctic?
Yeah, this is the habit that Trump and Putin share, to go to the last pieces of land where human activity didn't destroy the ecosystems. But it's happening on the massive scale in Russia already, with large oil and gas projects in the Arctic. And if Trump gets elected, there will be two of those crazy forces in the Arctic that would mean actually double acceleration to the climate crisis. And we are already in the emergency situation when we need to actually stop oil and gas production. And Putin and Trump are both interested in expanding it.
Do you know how many companies actually got involved at that meeting in Mar-a-Lago last April?
Well, they would probably deny now, but there were around a dozen CEOs or even more at that meeting. Yeah, represented not just themselves, but some of their allies as well. It's unclear how much exactly was already contributed to Trump, but as we see, his campaign is advancing and he has some resources. And this is actually a direct definition of corruption. When big business makes a direct deal with a politician who would serve their illicit and criminal interests if he's got elected. I call it illicit and criminal because actually repealing environmental regulations and climate policy in general is nothing else than crime against the humanity, because it puts every one of us on the firing line.
I think the Democratic Party in the United States called it a national security threat. Is that why you say you see it that way?
Well, the biggest national security threat is climate change, if we talk long term. But I think the U.S. intelligence services missed a lot of national security threats many years ago. Firstly, by allowing Exxon to strategically collaborate with Rosneft, the Russian largest big oil company. And we can recall the meetings between Tillerson, the former CEO of Exxon, with Rosneft.
He was Secretary of State, right?
Yeah, of Trump since 2016. Yeah, so people like Rex Tillerson and other CEOs that visited Russia became part of Putin's circle, and this should never happen in the first place. That shows that the U.S. failed to prevent state capture by big oil in the U.S. It had a pause with Biden, but Biden is very, I would say, arbitrary in his actions against big oil, and he doesn't confront them directly. But still, they are very unhappy with Biden because he at least implements some regulations and some limits on their activity. So now you cannot imagine a more terrible threat than a bloodthirsty maniac having a nuclear arsenal and billions of dollars of income from oil and gas sales, which is actually the situation with Putin. And the even trickier part is that those resources and money and influence that Kremlin has is also used against the West in a way of corrupting Western societies, Western elites, acting as a rotting agent to undermine democracy all over the world.
Okay. Wow. All right. What is the feeling in general in Ukraine about the U.S. elections?
Well, it looks a bit crazy and shows that the U.S. as a country in crisis on a political level, and it shows that the political system of the US is dysfunctional and corrupted, and that big oil and dirty money in general has a straight green light to intervene into politics and state affairs. And if Trump would get elected, that's actually another version of Putin, because that's the oil and gas office being established in Washington, D.C. I would call any supporter of Ukraine or any supporter of democracy to vote against Trump in the coming elections. Whatever you might think about Biden and his abilities and his old age and his vested interests, actually, Biden is the alternative to having a terrible autocrat in the office. And that might be repulsive to vote for a like old guy who was always in this dirty politics. And let's be honest about Biden. He was not very active in defending the interests of ordinary people and more engaged with the dominating interests and the industry and banks and big corporations. But he is still a democratic politician, and he was elected by a good will of people. And what is needed is to take his second term as a transition period to really bring a new generation of politicians to U.S. who could revive the U.S. and make the government functional once again as we face the largest threats in human history, and that's the maniacs with nuclear weapons. You need to have a functional government and functional state to be able to protect itself and allies. And if that's not happening, then we will have a lot of destabilization and wars in the world, and we don't know what it might end with.
And it must be particularly stressful right now for Ukrainians, because for you, the results are immediate.
For us, yeah, Trump's office would be a disaster in Ukraine, because for many occasions he said that he would stop military support for Ukraine. And that's the question of life and death for us. If we stop receiving U.S. support and U.S. weapons, we would have to fight Russian invaders without ammo, without planes, and a lot of people would die. Actually, a lot of my friends who are in the army, they could be killed if we don't have the necessary military equipment and support that we are currently receiving from the U.S. If U.S. is stepping away from the fight, it could possibly encourage Russia to attack other European countries, and that could escalate to a continental war between Russia and democratic Europe.
Which could be profitable for the oil companies.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, thank you on that happy note.
Well, yeah, thanks. I don't want to be a doomsayer, but I think it's a time to be concerned, and it's time to really mobilize and make sure that Trump doesn't get elected.
Have a good evening, and thank you so much.
Yeah, it was my pleasure to speak with you, and take care, and I wish you endurance and best of luck in November.
Good night. That's it for Sprouts. Many thanks to our guest, Oleg Savitsky. Oleg is a climate and energy policy expert at the Ukrainian Climate Network and board member of EcoAction. He works on many levels of Ukrainian and international society to advance reforms in the area of energy and environment. He's a founding member and advisor to Razum We Stand, a grassroots Ukrainian organization mobilizing for clean, renewable, and safe energy and an end to fossil fuel dependency. More about their work can be found at RazumWeStand.org. Razum is spelled R-A-Z-O-M. The article we've been discussing, called Big Oil Finances Putin's War Crimes and Trump's Political Ambitions, can be found at EuromaidanPress.org. Euromaidan is spelled E-U-R-O-M-A-I-D-A-N. The opinions expressed in this program belong to the guests and do not necessarily represent the opinions of the radio station airing this program or its staff. The Sprouts theme music is Torpedoes on Tuesday by Poison Control Center. Sprouts is a weekly program produced in collaboration with community radio stations and independent producers across the country. The program is coordinated and distributed by Pacifica Radio. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to showcase nationally, I have been your host for this week, Ursula Rudenberg. Thank you for listening, and see you next week on Sprouts.